I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today we talk with the Maine Turnpike Authority's new director to learn about his plans and priorities for Maine's busiest road. Andre Briere has led the MTA since April. He came here from the New Hampshire Department of Transportation and has an interesting background that includes service as a U.S. Air Force colonel and as a defense attaché to Moscow. What questions and comments do you have about Maine's Turnpike? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. Andre Briere, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thanks so much for having me today, Jennifer.
So I have to ask you, how do you think your background, especially your time in the Air Force, has prepared you for this role as director of the Maine Turnpike Authority?
Yeah, I thanks for the question. It can seem, I think, on its face a bit jarring because I, you know, spending all the time I did as a pilot and in the Air Force and in the intelligence arena, like you said, finally concluding my career in Russia, doesn't seem like it's a natural fit for transportation. But part of my career, you know, as you get more senior, you don't choose the assignments you get. So about 12 years ago, I was assigned as the second in command of all transportation for U.S. forces in Europe. And part of that was working national level transportation issues, planes, trains, automobiles, moving cargo, equipment, food, et cetera, to our forces in Europe and Africa. So I had a really good 2.5 year crash course in transportation issues of all sorts, in addition to being a transportation practitioner for most of my career. Really gave me the bug and went to New Hampshire DOT shortly after retiring from the military, spent 4 years there. These fine folks at Maine Turnpike knew of me, knew of my work in our national organization, so asked me to interview. So that's kind of how I got here.
I understand you have a big list of goals for the Turnpike, but that number one is improving safety for crews in work zones. You did Absolutely. A study last year that looked at how many drivers speed in work zones. So, Andre, how bad is it? Are people going 5 or 10 miles an hour over the posted speed or more? And what are you hearing from workers about how they feel when they're out there?
It's such an important issue, and it's, you know, it's at the forefront of my mind. I have no greater responsibility as executive director of the Turnpike than ensuring that the folks who work for me and our partners in the contracting community get to go home each night to their families. It is an undeniable fact that our roadways are a hazardous place to work, but work we must. We have to keep up and improve our turnpike through regular projects, and that means putting our workers in close proximity to traffic. Now, part of my work I mentioned in my previous answer, I was a board member of the American Association of State Transportation Officials. That's the national organization for commissioners and secretaries of transportation. While I was there, I worked on the issue of and it's really a nationwide issue of excessive speed in our work zones and on our highways. And it became particularly acute after the pandemic. We had about 21, 22, 23, a really steady ramp up of speeds on our nation's highways. Secretary Buttigieg spoke a lot about this. And that really came from decrease of enforcement over that time period, just because of the very understandable dangers during the pandemic. But what it left us with is a situation where every state in the country has to grapple with these excessive speeds. Now, what we found over the summer, we did, and this was simply baseline data gathering, we did about 2.5 million measurements through work zones. And this is not just, a work zone at night when no workers are present. The measurements we took were all in work zones when workers are present, work was being done. What we found was that it depends on the month, we did this from July all the way through October, between 65 and 75% of all vehicles transiting our work zones were traveling in excess of 11 miles an hour over the speed limit. So that's greater than 11 miles and over the speed limit.
Most
drivers were doing that. Now, what I will say is that right around there, right around 11 miles an hour, is really the borderline between safe and unsafe driving through these work zones. Work zones, as many listeners know, usually feature, some change in traffic pattern, whether that's a lane shift or, all lanes shifting because there's extensive bridge work. These are inherently dangerous places. So excessive speed, coupled with with that dynamic of workers working in close proximity to traffic, coupled with something we have really seen an increase of over the last 5 to 10 years, and that is faces and phones. So that's distracted driving. The three-legged danger stool of traffic is inebriation, inattention, and excessive speed. If you can take one of those factors out, you make everything a lot safer. And I think we as a nation have done a lot to make a dent into intoxicated driving, whether that was through the efforts of Mothers Against Drunk Driving or, the emergence of Uber as an alternative. We've really made a lot of headway there. What we've backslid on to a large extent is the distractedness. So what we find is the vast majority of work zone crashes, and your reader, your listeners might be surprised to know, here in Maine, over the past 5 years, we've had almost 3,000 work zone crashes. So 2,979 to be exact. That was as of a couple months ago. And I wish I could say that count wasn't increasing, but it really is. And 16 people have lost their lives in work zone crashes in our state over the last 5 years. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of crashes. And I think you mentioned the work zone automated enforcement bill that we're advocating in the legislature this session, LD 1457, is really designed to calm and slow traffic in these work zones, and we think it's very important.
So you're advocating for a bill, a new bill, that if it is passed, would this create cameras on the turnpike? Is that what it would do?
Yeah, and I think it's important to understand that we are not first out of the gate with this. This is legislation that I've been involved with this effort for a number of years. 23 other states currently have fully operational programs, and what these do is set up well noticed. So this is, nobody's getting surprised by these. Lots of signage to let people know that there's automated enforcement ahead. These are mobile vehicles with radars and cameras that only take pictures of license plates of vehicles that are going more than 11 miles an hour over the speed limit through work zones. And the intent is not to give people tickets, quite the opposite. The intent is to give no tickets at all and have traffic just slow down. Again, the pad is very generous. Anybody can... just if you don't have cruise control on and you're headed down the highway, especially a wide road like the turnpike, it's perfectly understandable that you're going to vary up and down a little bit. But this is only to get people to go below 11 miles an hour over the posted speed limit. So just calm traffic.
Legislation has to be passed to do this. This is something you can't just do unilaterally.
That's correct. Because of a number of previous laws on the book in the state of Maine. And look, I am a driver too. I don't want speed traps. I don't want to get caught. You know, it's certainly true that there are some municipalities around our country, especially with like things like red light cameras or, I guess municipalities tend to be the worst actors here. If you've ever lived in Washington, D.C., you know the city of Washington loves to get you going 1 mile an hour over the speed limit because that's a major source of revenue for them. This is not that, right? This is purposely designed in the way the bill was constructed. And I think it's important to note, no state funds go to this program whatsoever. This is funded entirely by Maine Turnpike. And it's just a reminder. That's mostly, most of our revenue comes from out-of-state drivers. Two-thirds of that comes from out-of-state. So this is Maine Turnpike funding this to the tune of about $2 million a year to implement this program. None of the revenues for violations come back to us. They all go to the general fund in the state. So this is something that I think is so important. I'm buying safety for my employees and our partners and our state troopers. I'm so passionate about it, and it's important, I think, for all Mainers to understand. We have robust privacy protections in this bill. We've worked very closely with ACLU since the bill was carried over last session to not only limit the amount of time. I think in the original legislation, it was about a year that we were able to hold on to the photographs of license plates that were speeding. We reduced that to 30 days. So we don't hold on to this data at all after final adjudication. That just means once you paid your fine, that gets destroyed. We've also added an independent third-party data auditor to the bill, and we have offered ACLU and other privacy groups the ability to choose who that is. So it's truly independent, truly third party to make sure we're doing what we're doing. We think after all the work that's been done, after all the legislative work and work with stakeholders the last 5 months, this is truly model legislation nationwide for privacy and ensures that it doesn't become one of those programs that Mainers resent, that it's truly designed just to slow traffic.
All right, well, let's talk about some other things that are kind of in the news. When you first came to the Turnpike, you talked about improving service plazas, including making changes in the food options. A lot of people were unhappy with the idea that Maine might have Chick-fil-A restaurants in the service plaza. So, what's the latest? Where are we in the plans to upgrade the service plazas?
Thank you for that question. That's really timely because we just signed the memorandum of understanding that gets us to the end stage of negotiations with Applegreen to improve those service plazas. Applegreen is
Applegreen
going to
is what?
Applegreen is our partner. So if you think of these as public-private partnerships, the service plazas, we own the underlying infrastructure, we own the buildings. What we do, and we have done for the last 25, or actually since, I take it back, it's since the inception of the Turnpike, because prior to that it was other providers. We partner with private companies to actually run them. So it was HMS Host. HMS Host, right around 2020, was that contract was bought by Applegreen, which is a global company that focuses on service plazas. They own the contracts for systems like the New York Thruway, the Jersey Turnpike, up and down the East Coast. They know what they're doing. They're going to put in about $25 million to renovate and modernize our service plazas to provide a better experience for Mainers. And the restaurant options, I'm so glad you asked. No, Chick-fil-A will not be coming in. While we are not announcing yet, we're going to do that in a press conference, hopefully in the next month or two, with Applegreen's what those selections are. What I can tell you is that my guiding principle and the guiding principle that I led with in this contract renegotiation was these service plazas, they don't need to be fast food wastelands, right? We can provide healthy options, options that that cater to members of our community that have food allergies, gluten-free options, local options. So what I wanted these service plazas to be is places that highlight the products, the produce, the people of Maine. And that is what Mainers will see when they see these remodeled facilities. They're going to be much more attractive, much cleaner, better bathrooms. We have a 4-bathroom setup, so the bathrooms will never close. They can be closed rotationally. And I think they will be very pleased with the restaurant options. It will not include Chick-fil-A, though, I can say. And there will also be food truck pads to ensure that local restaurant owners or local food truck owners will also have a platform to display their skills. And I mean, we live in Portland, one of the hottest restaurant scenes in the country. We can do better. That was my guiding principle, and we are going to do better. I'm very excited about unveiling what these are going to look like moving forward.
You won't even tell us one?
I can say with some assurity that it's probably going to include a Shake Shack. But it's the thing, like I said, I'm more excited about are the local food options that we're going to be included. There will be a large Made in Maine section that's going to include seasonal fare. You know, you're probably going to see some lobster rolls in there too. But I think that allowing the great restaurant scene here in Portland to be expressed at our service plazas is what I'm most excited about. Local is better, especially when it comes from Maine.
Well, Andre Breuer, I have so many more questions for you, as do members of our audience. The calls and emails are already coming in, but we do need to take a break. We are talking with the director of the Maine Turnpike Authority. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Our subject today, the Maine Turnpike, including safety and new initiatives. My guest today is Andre Breuer. He is the Maine Turnpike Authority's relatively new executive director. We invite you to join the conversation. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is Lieutenant Bruce Scott of the Maine State Police. He oversees the department's traffic division. Lieutenant Scott, thanks for taking the time to call in.
Good morning, and you're very welcome. Glad to be here. Thank you.
So just last week, a Maine State Police cruiser was hit on the Maine Turnpike. What happened?
So my understanding of that crash is that we already had an incident there in the median, and three troopers had responded to the scene and an attempt to shut down at least lane number one and lane number two to move traffic over to the right as far as possible to allow for a safe investigation of the incident that was already occurring when one of the vehicles was struck from behind.
So it was one of those cruisers that had its flashers on to help direct traffic over.
Correct. It would have been a fully marked unit with all of its lights on in lane number one trying to move traffic over.
Well, a little earlier in the program, we were discussing how often there's speeding in work zones and how dangerous that is for Maine Turnpike workers, work crews. And I'm wondering if troopers are feeling the same way. Are there many close calls when they're on the turnpike?
So there's many close calls every day, unfortunately, and I'm sure that you've heard throughout the country there's about one person struck and hit daily that some type of emergency worker or first responder. There's about 60 fatalities a year throughout the country. And every day as police officers are out there, not just on the Maine Turnpike, but in enforcing the laws on every road, there are numerous, numerous close calls. I hear of it almost daily where a police officer, a trooper is almost hit so close that their hats blow off their heads at times.
Scary. So tell us, what is the law on the turnpike? There are very clear laws about the turnpike or 295 for drivers when they see the flashing blue lights.
So the law is clear on any road, but in particular where your speeds are higher, it's of greater importance. So Maine Turnpike and I-95, other major corridors, the law requires that you slow down and move over. If it's not possible to move over, you have to considerably slow down to make sure that you can react to any situation. And that's the problem when you're perceiving this as a motorist, is you don't know what that problem is. You don't know why there are lights there. It could be anything from a broken down vehicle to a crash to a fire. It could also be that a police officer is there attempting to make an arrest, and that can spill over into the street, into the lane where the vehicles aren't occupying. So we ask that you slow down considerably if you can't move over. But if you can move over, the law would require that you move over to a non-adjacent lane and still pass slower than you would have been traveling before, certainly reduced below the speed limit.
Well, thank you for calling in. That is Lieutenant Bruce Scott with the Maine State Police. So many calls coming in, Andre. I'll go to Carl in Minot. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Carl. I live in Minot next to Auburn, and prior to that, I lived in New Gloucester for decades, many decades. Back in the legislation that created the Maine Turnpike, it was going to become free in the early 1980s when the bonds were paid off. Same situation in Connecticut. Connecticut made theirs free, and Maine has not. Subsequently, in the 1990s, there was a proposal by the Maine Turnpike to put a barrier toll into Scarborough. Scarborough said it was going to cause all this pollution, it was going to hurt their marsh. Yet when the Scarborough exit was put in, promptly thereafter, the Cabela giant parking lot was put in. So we have a barrier toll in New Gloucester, barrier toll in Gardner, and there's a lot of leakage around the New Gloucester toll to bypass that toll and get back on in Gray. And a Stacy Stratter was run over and killed in New Gloucester crossing Route 100, Lewiston Road, this past August. And I do not know factually or not, but there's assertions been made by people from New Gloucester that the driver of that vehicle was bypassing the barrier toll on New Gloucester. So when are we going to get a free turnpike like we've been promised?
All right, Carl, thank you for your question. Andre.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Carl, for that question. I will take exception to what you said at the top, which is free road. There are no free roads. Roads and the maintenance of roads and highways are paid for by someone. That someone can be the state, or that someone can be our friends from away who are more than happy to contribute to the maintenance of this highway. The problem with making a turnpike so-called free is that it's not free. The state and the state gas tax has to support it. I don't want to get into the arcana of federal highway funding other than to say the state of Maine already gets credit for the lane miles on the turnpike when it comes to their federal formula funds. That's the funding they get every year from the United States Department of Transportation. So folding the turnpike into DOT or making it quote-unquote free brings almost no additional money to the state. So what that would mean is the tax on gas, the fuel tax, the gas tax, would have to go up about 27 cents a gallon to support the turnpike. Instead, I think we have a far superior model, which very far-sighted Mainers shortly after the Second World War were innovators at, one of the first in the country, is to have that supported by people who use it. And in our case, over two-thirds of tolls are paid by out-of-state drivers. Now, that's a deal I think most Mainers think is a good one. And my goal as executive director of the Turnpike is to keep lowering prices for Maine Easy Pass holders. And that's an important distinction. I can't say Mainers because interstate commerce laws prevent us from discriminating based on where you live. What we can do is say we're going to provide increased discounts and keep tolls flat or low for Maine Easy Pass holders. And I do encourage all your listeners, if you don't have an Easy Pass, we're gonna make that increasingly easier over the next year. We're gonna introduce an app so you can go, you know, start to finish, pay for everything, put in all your information on an app. You don't have to come into Turnpike anymore. We'll be releasing that the second part of this year. But if you don't have an easy pass, you can't take advantage of the 20, 30, 40% discount that we offer for Maine Easy Pass holders. And my goal and my intention is just to increase those discounts over time. So we want to keep Mainers being able to use the Turnpike at a very low cost. Right now, we're in the lower 25% of tolls nationwide. That means we are a very cheap ride for Mainers. We intend to keep it that way and just to increase discounts over time. So all in all, I think we have a system that is right where we want it. We want Mainers to enjoy our beautiful facility, and we want our friends from away to help pay for it. That's a good deal.
Andre, let me ask you a follow-up to something else Carl was talking about. He was talking about the toll, the barrier tolls. And I had read that the Maine Turnpike Authority's goal was to not have toll takers very soon and to have people be able to use credit cards if they don't have an easy pass. Is that true? And what's the timeline for that?
So I will say yes and no. Good news is we also intend to introduce credit card point of sale in the toll lanes second part of this year. And that is that's going to just be more convenient. But I think coupled with the introduction of our full service app, those two things are going to allow motorists to pay in any way they want, to include things like Venmo or you know, newer ways to pay. But I think more broadly, I have a different perspective than even I had as Deputy Commissioner of New Hampshire DOT. Now, when I was in New Hampshire, I was Mr. AET, and that's all electronic tolling. I was a big advocate for it. I pushed it through the New Hampshire legislature. I thought it made perfect sense, and it did, in New Hampshire to go to all electronic tolling. That's no toll takers. One of the reasons for that is the state of New Hampshire really hasn't kept up on paying their employees, so it was very difficult to hire toll takers. In addition, our service plazas, our toll plazas in New Hampshire were nearing the end of service life, and we had to recapitalize, and we had to decide, do we do that in a much cheaper way without toll takers, or do we reconstruct these toll lanes? So that made sense there. When I came to Maine, what I found was quite different. What I found was very new tolling facilities. What I found was a dedicated tolling workforce. What I also realized is that, you know, the Turnpike, we want it to be a customer-friendly, customer-forward experience. And there are a lot of our users that like that interaction with our wonderful, dedicated tolling workforce, over 100 of them. So for us, I determined we are not going to move to all electronic tolling. We're going to retain our toll takers, but what we are going to do is improve ways to pay and to allow people to avail themselves of all those different ways, but still take advantage of interacting with our friendly toll takers if they so choose.
We'll go to Lisa calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead, Lisa, with your question. Yep.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
So I'm a veterinarian in Bar Harbor, and I'm concerned about the vehicle-wildlife collisions that I see when I'm on the Turnpike, and wondering if there's any initiatives or discussions going on to try and address that, as there are in other states.
Didn't quite catch it. Was that vehicle wildlife?
Yeah, wild, and how? And I think she's asking about some of the initiatives in other states to create wildlife crossings. And is there any plan to do that kind of thing here?
There is. I'm very excited about that. So, when we talk about that, we have to talk both fish passage as well as wildlife transit. I had the great benefit of living all over the world during my career, and one of the places I lived was southern Germany in the Stuttgart area. I was there when they opened the first true wildlife overpass of the Autobahn right near there. And I loved it. I thought it was a tremendous idea. We are looking for opportunities in future projects to incorporate wildlife passage, and that's either over or under our Turnpike. Now, I think it's true to say that when the turnpike was designed originally back in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. That wasn't a priority, right, anywhere in the country, especially with the interstate system laid down. They had more or less a philosophy of straight line, let's build it. Right. That is no longer our philosophy. We're looking at opportunities, and we're working with Inland Fish and Wildlife here in Augusta to improve fish passage in our culverts and also look for opportunities in future projects to ensure we have better wildlife passage across the turnpike. So that is a priority of mine, and we're looking for opportunities to do that. And hopefully we'll be able to announce something in that regard in the not too distant future. There's opportunities on the books right now.
Lisa, thank you for your call. Let's see, we'll go to Scott calling from Portland. Hi, Scott, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if you have given any consideration to, back to the issue of speeding and safety, especially with regard to construction workers. Have you considered or given any consideration to, well, this will sound like an odd question, but bear with me, is redefining the definition of speeding? And maybe you can see where I'm going with this, which is you can be going the posted speed limit or lower, perhaps, but you still might be meeting the definition of speeding if you're following the vehicle in front of you too closely. So I was wondering if you had given any consideration to that and ways to mitigate it through cameras or radar distance detection or some such thing like that.
Yeah, I think if I'm understanding your question right, you're saying there's more to hazardous driving than just the speed on the speedometer. There's also your conduct on the roadway. Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think we're on the brink of a pretty exciting time in the transportation industry. And this is not some theoretical future. If you look at Waymo, the way they're operating in Southern California, Arizona, the desert Southwest, obviously conditions are a bit different there, but the rise and the advent of automated vehicles is, I think, quite exciting to improve safety. And they improve safety by an order of magnitude in their operations. I think we tend to see the headlines when when Waymos get stuck in intersections, when there's a power outage or, things, they're working quirks out of their system. But I think that's just one aspect of increased safety equipment that's being installed on new vehicles. And you already see it with, dynamic cruise control. The next step is integrating those into improved safety features system-wide. We are investing at the Turnpike quite a bit in additional technology in our traffic management control center to be ready for the next phase. And I do think the next phase is taking advantage of these new technologies. The greater connectivity between vehicles, like I said, I think is just around the corner, and that will help. I think it's also true to say that speed and the culture, and again, Secretary Buttigieg, he had a lot of great perspectives on this. One of the things that I really like that he used to talk about is the culture of safety and driving in our country and the extent to which that is a choice. Right? You go other places in the world, and there's no panacea. Every place has its problems. But you look at the per capita accident rate in places, in countries in Europe, in countries in Asia, it is a fraction of what ours are. And we're not talking pure volume, we're talking per capita. So that means that we have a whole lot more accidents per citizen than we need to have. And the way I like to talk about it is I think a safety culture is made up of individual decisions. It's deciding when you're on the road that you're not going to look at your phone, that you're going to do a reasonable speed. And those, thousands and hundreds of thousands of individuals' decisions can really improve the safety culture on main roads. And I'm confident of that. And I'm optimistic about it as well.
All right. Thanks, Scott. So many questions still coming in. I'll go to a quick email from Paul. Do they plan to increase the EV infrastructure at the toll plazas / rest stops?
Yeah, the answer is yes. So that is part of our renegotiated contract with Applegreen. They are going to be putting additional EV chargers in, and we want to make it our turnpike as EV friendly as possible.
All right. Well, we do need to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking with the executive director of the Maine Turnpike Authority, Andre Briere. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What are some of the challenges facing the Maine Turnpike Authority, and what are some of the changes coming up? My guest today, Maine Turnpike Authority Director Andre Briere. Share your comments and questions. The lines are pretty full, but perhaps you can get through. 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Before we go back to the calls, Andre, I'd like to ask you a couple sort of big picture questions, things that have been debated for decades here in Maine. And one of them is whether the turnpike will eventually go to Fort Kent as it was originally planned to do.
Thanks for that question. I think there's always a lot of questions about expansion. The thing I think Mainers appreciate about the Turnpike is we do what we do extremely well. Part of that is we treat our people well. We tend to have long-serving, very highly experienced and expert employees, and we run a very efficient toll road in our state at a very affordable price for Mainers. You know, any discussion, I think this came up a lot with the, before my time at Turnpike with the Gorham Connector, we can do things quicker, you know, than Maine DOT can, just because our funding mechanisms are different. Right now, there are no plans on the books for that. I'll just answer that in a succinct way. But you know, we are always open to helping with the transportation needs of the people of Maine. And one of the changes that I did bring in with me is a much closer partnership and relationship with Maine DOT. That's, you know, not probably surprising because I come from a DOT background myself. But one of the great reforms that I think Maine decided on, and about the 2011-2012 time span, was to, in partnership between Maine DOT, by mutual agreement, we agreed that the Turnpike would give at least 5% of our revenues every year to state transportation projects. And because of the previous relationships I've had with the fine folks here at DOT who are hosting me today in this beautiful studio, what we've decided is we are really going to open the aperture on that cooperation. Some listeners may have heard right before the holidays that we just pledged $3.5 million to set up a new transit line between Scarborough and Portland. We are looking to be the venture capital agency to help improve multimodal transit and bike ped and everything else, full spectrum transportation for the people of Maine. And if we can do that in cooperation with our friends at DOT, we think we can make things better for everyone. And we are really determined to advance projects that improve that.
And Andre, that new transit line, would that be a bus service?
That's going to be a bus, yes. And we've had lots of conversations. We've helped with the studies with the Greater Portland Council of Governments as well. They're looking at, I think, their real long-term vision is a rapid transit corridor that helps relieve some of the pressure west of town, and we're partnering with them on that as well. We're looking at other transit projects, but also other roadway projects that can improve traffic flow at various choke points along our corridor. And we're, like I said, we have a process with Maine DOT, and we're really excited about increasing the pace and the aperture on those projects.
All right. And the other big question that's been debated for years is whether the Maine Turnpike Authority ought to become part of the Maine DOT. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, right when I got here, there were a couple bills that were in front of the legislature to that effect. And what I said then and what I'll say now and what I've said many times in the future is you don't want that. I lived that nightmare in New Hampshire, and I can tell you what that looks like. And what it looks like is a politicized process whereby I think your listeners are well aware that the gas tax hasn't increased in the state, even when it's been desperately needed because of a widespread construction sector and general inflation over the last 5 years. That can't move because it's a political process. And one thing our friends in the legislature don't like to do is increase costs on people, right? When you politicize tolls in a similar way so that you cannot respond to inflation and the realities of the construction sector, which you end up with, is a deteriorating system whereby you can fund fewer and fewer projects, you can maintain the road less and less over time. And in our particular case, when a turnpike, especially an independent turnpike, is at its best, it combines the innovation and of the private sector with the accountability and the long-term planning of the public sector. We are able to go out just like a private business would and issue bonds on the bond market at very cheap rates. That means we can do more with our transportation dollars because we are such a good credit risk for the bond market and just getting better. We're already in the top five turnpikes in the country because we have demonstrated over time a responsibility with funds and we've maintained our facility very well. I will tell you, if we combine into DOT like New Hampshire did, like Massachusetts did, everything gets worse very, very quickly. And I love my friends in New Hampshire. I was there for 4 years. I learned a lot from them. I think even they would agree that is the worst of all possible worlds.
All right. Yeah, we have so many calls coming in so little time. I'm going to go to Torbert in York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jennifer and guest. Three quick ideas. Sunday and tourist season in the afternoon and evening is a steel tsunami, a parking lot from York to Kennebunk. Why not just open it up and let them go free? It would be very popular with the tourist industry, and people would be more likely to come back. A second one is embellishing the median and the side areas to a wildflower meadow garden. Once you set it up, it would keep itself. You cut down on mowing and help the pollinators in crisis. Third one is more wooden fences between the turnpike and the towns. York, in the winter, you can hear the turnpike in the center of town.
Yeah, and Torbert, you're not the only person in our audience that would like to see more sound mitigation. Andre, can you remember the three questions?
Yeah, I'll maybe take them in reverse order, and you can remind me if I forget. We are very excited about being able to improve sound mitigation for our abutting communities. One of my priorities since getting to the turnpike is increasing community engagement. And that means, not just a lonely meeting in a school gym on a Thursday night before you do a project. That's really getting out into our abutting communities, finding out their needs and what their pressure points are and how they experience being our neighbor. We have some safety improvements planned north of exit 49 in the next few years. What we're doing very deliberately is partnering with those abutting communities to offer sound wall, sound mitigation options to the community, letting them choose which they'd prefer. I think the questioner mentioned one possibility, which is, I think what New Hampshire tends to do is those timber walls. That's not the only option by any stretch. What we're doing is we are asking the community what they want. And
over time, you have to combine those with other projects to make them efficient and cost effective. So what we're doing is, as opportunities come up, we're looking for ways to improve sound mitigation. You can do that in a number of ways. You can do that with berming, with landscaping, but we're looking to do that in a much greater, to a much greater extent than we have in the past. So thank you for that question. I'm blanking on the second one, but
wildflowers.
Yes. So we have a wildflower and pollinator program at the Turnpike, and we are also always looking for opportunities to expand that. We want to support the migrating monarchs and other insects. So we have a program, and we do combine that with projects to add more wildflower plantings as we go. Now, the first question, though, I guess I'd push back a little bit. I agree with the problem. So the problem is it can get congested during the height of tourist season. So there are a number of ways to go after that, and we are exploring many. To include surge pricing for non-main Easy Pass holders, but nothing will be done for about the next year and a half on that because we're studying it. We're studying the impact. The free flow of traffic along the Turnpike is something we can always do in an emergency, but again, what you're giving up is those fine folks from away being able to support our facility. And as a reminder, there is no such thing as a free roadway. Somebody pays, and in our case, I think it's a lot better that our out-of-state friends are able to contribute to our roadway than have Mainer supported by themselves.
We'll go to AMK calling from Scarborough. Hi, AMK.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think that you did mention the Gorm Connector, and I'm happy to hear about your sensitivities around the environment and the pollinators, and I hope that the Gorm Connector has finally been put to sleep based on citizen input, which you say is so very important to the MTA, and also the environmental damage it would have caused.
All right, AMK, so let me ask Andre, is indeed the idea for a Gorm Connector dead now?
Well, dead for us in the sense that it was always a DOT corridor. This was always a DOT problem to solve. It just so happens that about a decade ago, MTA was approached by the communities, by DOT and the legislature to try to help with a problem that still exists, which is, greater and greater congestion west of Portland. What is true to say is MTA stepped back from that. In my view, that is not core to our business. It's a kind of a euphemism, but for us, for me, the main line of the Turnpike is our main focus. So I'll just say DOT has a 2-year study process, and they are seeking to answer questions that should have been answered a long time ago, which is what can you do in a way that, on current alignments or a way that are less disruptive to the environment and communities to improve that flow. It does not need to be a multi-lane highway that barrels through sensitive areas. And yes, MTA stepped back from that. That is a DOT project, and they are going to study those for 2 years, and there'll be a robust public process that they will conduct to make sure the public has lots of input at the conclusion of that study.
AMK, thanks for your question. Andre, I have about 15 seconds, and I have to ask you, everybody in Maine is getting a new license plate by the end of the year. Do they have to re-up their Easy Pass?
If you changed license plates, please update that. But like I said, you'll soon have an app. You can do all that on the app, and hopefully we'll be able to announce that in a few months.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. That's Andre Briere, the Executive Director of the Maine Turnpike Authority. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're talking public health. We are talking with medical leaders about surging flu cases and other public health issues. Don't forget, sign up for Maine Calling's weekly newsletter. It is free and lets you know what's coming up in the week ahead. You do that at mainecalling.org. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.